Welcome to Pure Wrestle Podcast. I'm Mike.
And this is Orlando, and we're on episode 394.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel, I feel like we should be in the 400s right now for whatever reason, but.
Really? I don't know. I feel like 394 is a good number. We need to find out when we become the longest running reselling podcast in the world. That would be a cool little thing to add to our introduction.
Our accolades. We're getting there. I think Scavenger Life ended at like 400 something. So
all right.
Now, what if we should just drop a podcast a day for like 30 days? I'm joking.
Just pound them out.
We would just get there pretty quick.
See, I'd rather have good content than just constantly I wouldn't have enough to talk about, you know. I mean, I guess there's always something to talk about. But then it gets a little bit more into the nitty gritty. And I think what kind of shines with what we do is, and if you're new to our podcast, especially these update episodes, we like to talk about what's going on, you know, first of all, in our life, reselling wise, with some interesting stories, things that could be very applicable to other people. Then we do our kind of news, the reseller topics, the things that are going on in the reselling world, whether it's eBay updates or Amazon changes or things happening with shipping. And we like to cover those things in some detail, give some analysis. And then we have our spicy bolos, our items that you should be on. The items you should be on the lookout for as you are at garage sales, thrift stores, on Facebook Marketplace, whatever it is. That way you can be picking up those hot items and making money.
Well, there you go. So how's reselling life going? You experienced the eclipse, changed your life, and now you're back to normal reselling life. So how have things been?
No, it's actually been really good. I'm still working on the video that I'm planning on putting out with utilizing... Facebook Marketplace as a tool for finding garage sales. Some people mentioned in the comments that, you know, Craigslist, don't sleep on Craigslist. And I agree. When I was in San Diego, the Craigslist app was the number one way I found garage sales for sure. But they're just, for whatever reason, the people here in this town that I'm in, they don't tend to use Craigslist as much for those things. And so Facebook Marketplace is the primary way. But I'm also noticing that there are a lot that either aren't listed or I just haven't found. I'm learning the area more and more, which is really nice because I've kind of figured if I go out on a Saturday morning and I drive in certain areas, I'm going to see garage sale signs. And I kind of hated that when I was first starting reselling, just driving around, because sometimes you could drive for a long time and not find anything. Sometimes like the place where the sign is, like you're driving on a main road and you're like, oh, I just passed it. I think that was a garage sale sign. So then you're trying to flip around and then it's not in a place where you could read and they just have an address. So you're trying to find a way to stop and look at the address. And so that can be annoying, but I found here that if I go to the areas of town that I feel like I'm gonna have better luck. Some of the areas that are a little bit more affluent, I kind of can know the main roads now. I'm starting to, not just the main highway roads, but some of the bigger like city streets that kind of are the primary branch offs, you know, and I can find different garage sales. And if I'm in a good area, I tend to find some really decent ones. So I don't think Facebook Marketplace is the end all be all. I think it's very limited. I think it's absolute garbage, to be honest, when it comes to finding garage sales. And I've found a few hacks that make it more usable. But just driving around has actually been a little bit more pleasant here because, you know, think of San Diego, right? If you're just driving around, it's like, man, who knows? But if you were to say like all you had to do is drive around an area the size of Santee and maybe El Cajon, you would know the streets you would want to go on, the streets you'd want to avoid. Mm-hmm. It gets a little bit easier, right? If you can kind of narrow. Yeah. If you can kind of narrow it down. And so that's part of just learning my area. I've been here it's not quite been a year yet. It's been a year since I bought my house here. So I've been here and come to this town at least for a year now. And so I'm really starting to get a better feel for it. And it just goes to show that you can resell anywhere. But sometimes it does take a little bit to kind of get your bearings again. But it was really cool because I went to this I went to a church rummage sale and I talked about it on, maybe it was our live, maybe it was a podcast we did. Speaking
it's
of
all
which,
blurred these just, days.
It's true. If you're just listening to us on the podcast right now, come on over to YouTube, hit the like and subscribe button, and hit the bell notification. I'm doing a shameless plug right now because we have our live episodes that go up on Mondays, and you don't want to miss those because they don't make it to the podcast. They only are on YouTube, and we tend to go like 15 minutes, 30 minutes sometimes, and sometimes that's our best content because we have great notes coming in and comments coming in from listeners who have sometimes way more insight to offer than Orlando and I potentially have on a subject. So definitely come on over and do that. But that being said, I was at a garage sale. I talked about it a little while ago about picking up a Harley like bag, saddlebag thing. And at this church rummage sale, I was really bummed because it was the second day. Now, the debate is still going on first, second day, last day for estate sales. I think I've landed on going to the end, not the beginning. But when it comes to rummage sales, sometimes the sales get really good, 50% off and stuff when you get towards the end. But usually church rummage sales, the prices are already so good to start with. Mm-hmm. They tend not to overcharge on things. The prices tend to be some of the best you're going to get anywhere. And so I was kind of bummed because it was a Saturday that I went, but their first day was on a Friday. So I missed that golden, you know, opening with all the good stuff out on the tables, but I was still able to find some good things. And one of the things that I picked up, I saw like, it looked like a suitcase or a briefcase, more like a briefcase, I guess, open, and it had some tools in it. And I could tell by the insert inside, it's like a nice leather insert, like across the front and then on the bottom, and then the bottom part lifted up, and then the front one was like buckled in, you could bring it down, and there's all these tools inserted into it. And I could tell by the leather, I'm like, this is like really good quality. So I bring the case down, somebody's name was written on it, you know, they had it stenciled in on the top of the briefcase, but it was a Jensen basically briefcase toolbox with the inserts for that. And so I see that they only want $20 for this thing with all the tools inside of it. So I look it up. I look up these models with these leather inserts, and just the insert and case alone, a couple $100 potentially, depending on which, you know, inserts you have, the quality they're in, especially if they're like newer, but even older, you're still looking at north of $100. And then I'm like, oh man, even if all these tools are just junk tools, this is a killer deal. I could pick this up for $20. Then I start pulling out the different tools, and I'm noticing it seems to be like a set. And then there is some stuff in there, especially on the bottom portion, that was just like thrown in things, random tools and razor blades and wires and things that, you know, some electrician was using. But then I started pulling out the tools and looking those up because I made a how to sell, resell tools. And this wasn't a brand that I see very often, so I wasn't 100% sure. But man, I'm looking at like, there's, for instance, inside of this thing, they're tiny. Like a lot of these are like almost like electrical pieces, like the different pliers and things. And so there's like 8 different pliers in one of the pockets. And I pull these pliers out and I'm looking them up, and these things sell anywhere from like $15 to $30 each used. And then there's the screwdrivers. Yeah. And then there's like all these pieces in there. And I'm like, man, if I part this thing out, I'm going to make a killing on this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, took it and carried it out, paid $20, and man, I'm going to make a fortune on it. Plus, you kind of get to learn more and more about different things. Like you've learned a lot about things like Hot Wheels over the years. And I kind of enjoy, I wouldn't call myself like the most handy of handymen, but I'm learning more and more. YouTube University has been pretty good to me.
We also have a whole tool video that you dropped years ago.
So I've definitely learned a lot more about tools as the years have gone, and it's just nice having that in my back pocket, is just knowing a little bit about tools. I kind of have an idea of what's worth picking up and what's not. Plus I can kind of say like, hey, even if these things don't sell, I can kind of fill out my own personal toolbox as well. And replace things. I've when I first got, you know, first graduated high school, first started getting my own tools, first got married, it was just Harbor Freight tools, you know, and I don't know if you do a lot of stuff like with Harbor tools, Freight. Orlando, but Harbor Freight, a lot of times people call them knuckle busters.
Yeah, it's a discount, you know, you're in the
middle
store. Yeah.
You're in the middle of cranking something down and the tool breaks and you slam your knuckles on something. And there's some good stuff at Harbor Freight for sure. I still have a lot of Harbor Freight things, but it's nice to be able to replace kind of my older, junkier stuff with nicer, you know, USA made tools and sell it and make a ton of money too. So that I would say that was a huge success for me. I had a lot of fun kind of going through that toolbox, and I'm going to go through it one more time as I start to list those items. So that's kind of been the highlight of my week. What about you, Orlando? How are things going?
I don't know. I'm looking at the notes here. You know, it's interesting. Since I did the removing the cap of dynamic ad rating on eBay. So if you're new to eBay, eBay really wants you to promote listings, you know, regardless of how long you've been selling. But, you know, if you're in a saturated field, I strongly encourage you to promote your listings. Doesn't mean you have to promote it at a high percentage. But what that means, if you're brand new, is that outside of the fees that eBay takes, you know, the 10% or 13%, then there's another fee that they take out if your item sells. And that fee is taken out if somebody clicks on your sponsored post. So you can choose what percentage you want. So if you want to pay 2% across the board, you can do that. That's what I used to do. You want to do 4%, 5%. And then there's this thing called dynamic ad rate, where eBay basically tells you to trust the system. And, you know, whatever percentage in the market is the current percentage for items that you are listing, it'll charge you that when the item sells. And that can fluctuate back and forth. Now, the other part of it is that you can cap it. And so I used to have an 8% cap on my dynamic ad rate. Well, sales weren't happening. They were, you know, pretty slow. And I was kind of at wit's end. I was doing everything. I was, you know, doing free returns, great pictures, you know, competitive pricing, listing every day, like everything that you should do. Every box that needs to be checked, I was checking. And so I decided to remove the cap and my sales came back to normal. Now, it's something that Mike had been saying for a while. He always says this, which is fine. I think it's a good point of view is, well, then you end up working, you know, more for less. And that's kind of what has happened now, right? I have more sales. I really do. But some of these sales, right, I've had the 10%, you know, eBay fee. And then on top of that, I have another 10%, right, from promoted listings. So we're talking about like 20%, right? Which if you sell on Poshmark, that's standard. But on eBay, you know, there is some leeway. But to me, you know, I've always said it's better to have, you know, 20 sales with that 20% than for me to get 10 sales at the 10%. And it depends on, you know, what you're selling, what your cost of goods. There's a lot involved. But I will say it has allowed sales to be consistent. I don't have those days anymore where I'm like, man, I'm not selling anything. Nothing's going to happen. Because there were days like that. There were days where it'd be like one or two. And I'm like, what's going on? I have like 3,000 something items. Like that is pretty rare right now. Right now, it's been consistent sales. So that's been nice. No home runs, though. I haven't had any massive sales like a hustle of the week besides the last one I had shared with that Nintendo C. I have had a few $100 sales here and there, but most of it's been bread and butter, $20 to $40. I have noticed I am definitely shifting from clothing to collectible goods. And I had mentioned this before, but I see it even more when I source. Like now when I look at clothing, I don't look at, wow, those are items I can list on eBay. I go, I wonder how cheap I can get these so I can sell these on whatnot. So my model's definitely changed. I'll be, you know, I'm considering doing whatnot every Thursday, you know, for until whatnot is no more. And I really do enjoy that because I found that clothing after a while became like working at a warehouse for me, right? Because clothing, you know, it's rinse and repeat. You know, you find good items, you know, you take measurements, you take the pictures, you list them and, you know, rinse, repeat, same old, same old. With collectibles, like it's always a treasure. Now, don't get me wrong. With clothing, there is a treasure. You know, you find that vintage single stitch that's worth a lot of money. And, you know, you find that, you know, grail, that Filson jacket or that, you know, Willis and Geiger item. But it's not the same. And so I'm noticing that. And as I'm cutting down that clothing inventory, I'm like, wow, I have so much room now. So much, you know, opportunity to kind of like reorganize. And so I'll talk about that, but I'm looking forward to some of that. And then on top of that, I just, you know, I'm in this place right now where I'm really being selective and I am being very careful because I find right now that I got to tell you, and I've been saying this for a long time, but it's the same thing now that even more now than ever, you can't just go, hey, I'm going to go pick up just every single, you know, Rain Spooner shirt. I'm going to pick up every, okay, or Ren Spooner. I know people get on my case for mispronouncing it. Or
wait,
I'm going to...
Have you been saying it wrong this whole time?
Well, I knew I was saying it wrong. I just said people knew.
But then I thought, I've been saying it wrong too then. I just assumed it was Rain Spooner. It's not Rain Spooner? No,
it's Ren Spooner, yeah.
Oh, no, man. That's like going back to the, what was that shoe that I...
Oh, Merrell? Merrell shoes?
Yeah, Merrell. I think Merrell sounds better than Merle. Merle.
I think so too, but it's
Merrell.
So
Merrell sounds more fancy.
And then since I haven't been sourcing a lot lately, I realized how much inventory I do not have listed. And I will tell you, the line between reselling and being a hoarder, it's gotten pretty blurry for me. And so I'm gonna really buckle down these next few days. You know what it's like in the podcast room. It's supposed to be for podcasts, but there's inventory everywhere. When we're recording back in the day, my eBay room's cleaned up. It's more of a whatnot room now. And I just, you know, I tell everyone, like, and we're going to talk about this reseller topics. Like, you got to do things that keep you fresh in reselling. And right now, I think the only thing that outside of the profit, the only thing that really keeps me going is that treasure hunt. And so if you find yourself, like, I'm so done with it. I'm so tired of sourcing the same things. I'm so tired of doing this. Maybe switch it up. Maybe change gears a little bit, because I don't know. I have a lot of respect for those people that have been doing the same thing for like 20 years. Like, lots of respect for them, especially on eBay. Like, in education, you know, 20 years is never the same, right? It's never the same day to day, hour to hour, minute to minute. But when it comes to reselling, it can be pretty much a lot of the same if you're just doing the same category over and over again. So that's pretty much what I have. I don't have anything exciting. Garage sales have been kind of blah. I don't know. It rained again, you know, during the weekend. And so it didn't rain when there was garage sales, but people were anticipating rain, so there wasn't that much. So it's been kind of interesting. I haven't had, I have all these people that, you know, they don't source for me, but they reach out to me whenever they find, you know, inventory, or like they work for businesses, whatever. And I haven't gotten a lot of phone calls lately. I'm just not sure what's happening, but right now, luckily I bought a ton of inventory in 2023. So even though things have kind of dried up as far as sourcing recently, I still have a lot of inventory that I can list. So you got to think about that too. You know, we had talked about that all in 2023, like, now is the time to source. Now is the time to source. And now I think in 2024, I think people are holding on to their items a little bit tighter, and maybe trying to get a little bit more money just because of the macro environment.
All right. So with all that being said, we wanted to take a quick moment to thank our sponsor for this episode, Vindu. Now, Vindu has been an incredibly powerful tool that Orlando and I have been able to use in order to make sure that we're still able to make money, no matter how difficult it is with reselling and the changing of platforms and just customers not maybe buying as much as they were, or prices changing. Vindu has been a powerful tool that we can use to make sure that we are still profitable.
And I got to tell you, I have loved using Vindu the last few months. It's super easy, super streamlined. A lot of perks, you know, for example, like removing background. Like, if you have old photos from way back when that you took and you don't want to go into Photo Room, well, this is already integrated into Vindu. You can go in there and it'll remove all those backgrounds super clean. And it's super simple. All one central location. You know, you could go to eBay and import all your listings, and then you could go, hey, I want this on Mercari, I want this on Poshmark, I want this on Grailed, I want this on Shopify, wherever you want it located. And it's very simple to use. So if you want to use it for like, you know, the first month and go, you know what, I really enjoy this and want to continue using it, you can get the first month for 25% off by using our link below and using the code PUREHUSTLE, all in caps. Again, use the link below, use the code PUREHUSTLE, you get 25% off the first month. And this is going to be a very streamlined way for you to cross post and continue getting more eyes on your items, which means more sales. All right. So here's the thing. Since I haven't been sourcing a ton, I don't really have any random stories, but I think you have a random story and I probably can chime in because I'm dealing with this a lot.
Yeah. So the other day, kind of going back to that idea of knowing the right neighborhoods to go to, and it's hit or miss. Like, sometimes some of the best stuff you find could come from neighborhoods you least expect it. But I was in a neighborhood that I wouldn't typically want to do garage sales at, but I found one that I was posted on Facebook Marketplace, and it was an early one, so I figured I might as well get there. And it was wonderful because when I first got there, he was still setting stuff up, and I got there like 15, 20 minutes after the start time, which was still pretty early, and nobody else was there. So I had like the time to just look at everything. And he had like a ton of video games. Like there were, you know, there was a Nintendo DS. It was kind of scratched. There were some DS games. There was some various games for other consoles. There were lots of things at this garage sale. But as I'm looking stuff up, I'm just realizing like there's just not money in any of it. Like it's a Nintendo DS with like 8 games, but the DS is kind of in bad condition, and each of the games only is like they're like $3 or $4 games tops. I'm like, all right, something seems a little interesting here. Then I start noticing like boxes of like, you know, lots of the same thing, like hair product stuff, and I'm like, I think this guy's a reseller. So I've got this like feeling that he's a reseller. So I'm looking, you know, some stuff up. And then he makes a comment. He's like, oh, I see you looking stuff up. If you want, I've got things over here. So I'm looking at what he has. And I found, and I almost made an Instagram post about it, but I found these two speakers, and I wasn't familiar with the brand. They were still in their boxes. They were packed. They're like loudspeaker type things, not huge boxes or like speakers, still something that you'd probably put up on your wall in a house or an auditorium or something. And so I'm looking them up, and I see only one comp on eBay, not a sold comp, just one posted of these items. And there's two of them, and I'm one listing, and there's two of them in front of me. And the listing was for like almost $400. And I'm like, oh, maybe these are valuable. But then I'm looking at the picture a little closer, and I'm looking at the boxes. I'm like,
I know where this is going.
These are the ones in the picture. Like, these are the ones. I'm like, then I like looked through a couple of the pictures, and sure enough, I see like a certain dent in the corner up in the top of one of them. And I look at the box. I'm like, yep, there it is. I'm like, this is the listing. I found the listing for these speakers. Nice. It's the only one. And so it's one of those things where like, if you're just going off of, oh, look what these are listed for, you could really be in some hot water, right? Because you never know. You might be looking at the item right in your hands that's listed at that price. So there was no sold of these items. So there were no sold of these items.
What was the cost?
I didn't even ask, because honestly, I didn't even ask, because I mean, he got to the point where he was willing to like work with me, but I just knew, like, I'm like, okay, he's a reseller. He's selling off his junk, right? So I even asked him. I said, oh, so do you do like eBay or something? And he's like, yeah, I'm getting out of it. He's like, I'm just tired of the scammers. I'm tired of people like mailing back boxes of sand. And I've never had that happen.
Strange to me.
Yeah. So I'm sure some people have had that kind of stuff happen too. I got the feeling initially that it was just he's selling off his junk. And or maybe just a bunch of bad buys. Like if I tried to sell off stuff that I bought the first couple of years, I'd probably have a lot of junk, you know, that's just not worth another reseller picking up for me, even if I try and give it away at a really good price. But it was just, I went from like really high to really low really fast, because in the listing I see all these video games, I see a DS, I see all these like different stuff that looked good, but just everything was just the wrong one, you know. Like, you know, when you buy a bundle of stuff and there's like two or three good items in there, and then like there's like 10 items that are just kind of the junk, this was all the junk. Like everything at the garage sale was this. But I just thought it was really funny. But I guess what makes it random is I was able to find the listing of the item that I was holding in my hands, and it was the only listing on eBay for this item. It must have been like a Chinese, you know, knockoff type thing, where it's just not sold in America or something. I don't know, but it was one of those moments.
You should have hit me up, do worth point, and see if like he was way off, you know, because that's true. Like sometimes people will go, oh, there's no, I didn't find any comps, so I'm gonna list this high. Well, maybe there's no comps because no one's gonna sell this. Maybe it's just garbage, you know. Now, okay, let's get back to that story of, you know, people getting returns with sand, or people get returns with rocks. I want to say, and I'm going to say something controversial, I don't believe 90% of the time when people say that. I really don't. In my 10 years of reselling, I've never had that experience. And watch it now. Somebody's going to buy something and send me a rock. But I've never had that experience. I know tons of resellers, and not ever have I had anybody ever say this happened. Maybe, you know, Rally Roots has done a video about like somebody had done something like that. And maybe I've watched another video. But when people say they're leaving eBay because of scammers, now it could be if you're selling like iPhones, you're more prone to get scammers, or maybe it depends on what you sell. But I don't believe it. Like I don't. Yeah. I mean, the effort it takes for somebody to fill a box with sand.
Yeah. You know, well, to qualify what you're saying, though, like you said, it's you don't believe majority of them, right? Like 90-95% of people.
Yeah.
Or just the fear. Because, yeah, that might be what it is. It could be that it was hard. You're trying to list things. It doesn't sell. And then you're trying to get out. And so, well, you know, that's just one of those things. Like you can use that as an excuse. And if you're on the social media, you go to e-commerce bites and you hear people's horror stories, then that can just be in your head of like, yeah, I just don't want that to happen to me. I don't want to sell on this platform anyways. It's kind of dangerous. You can get ripped. And I for sure have had things like we've talked about, things rented from us. We've had things, you know, mishandled or broken by the customer and then returned. So it does happen. Like you can get, you know, in a bad situation. And I've seen scams on eBay. My brother-in-law just tried to start selling. He had someone try and scam. I've had a couple of people scam me with things I've tried to buy. So there are scams for sure, but I just don't think it's not a legitimate enough reason to not sell on eBay. Now, it could just be that selling on eBay is hard, and if you don't know what you're doing, or you're not willing to put in that work, and it's not a bad thing. You just might say it's not worth my effort and time for the amount of money I'm making. But yeah, I don't know if that's a big enough reason to get out. Cause yeah, like you said, you've done it forever. I've been reselling for a long time. I've sold a lot of items. I've never had somebody return sand. So I would think it's like one of those things of like, I don't want to go outside. Cause what if I get struck by lightning? It's like, yeah, people get struck by lightning. My grandpa actually got struck by lightning. Like it does happen to people, you know, but that also is such a rare thing. That's usually not enough to like, you shouldn't base your whole life around it.
Yeah, I don't want people to abandon or be scared of reselling because of the scammer stories. Because it takes a lot of effort. And don't get me, it does happen. Like you said, it does happen, but I don't know.
We had somebody ship us from Amazon. This is an Amazon seller. They were supposed to sell, my mom ordered a big wheel for us, like one of those big wheels for my son.
Oh, yeah.
And we were tracking it, and it was supposed to go to that postal annex that, you know, was over by where I used to live and where I kind of had my business account at. And so we went to go pick it up, and it was all they had for us was an envelope, like a smaller, like manila envelope. And we open it, and it was a mouse pad. And they had tracking on it that they had sent it. And then they later like sent us an email saying, sorry, we can't send this to California, blah, blah, blah. But they were able to get through the initial part of Amazon showing that they had shipped something out.
So, and I think that's why they did that. I don't think they were trying to scam you. I think
they weren't trying to scam. Yeah.
That's what I mean. That wasn't even a scam. Like to get scammed, like it takes a lot of effort. Like it's because, you know, I understand why they did. It's kind of like people they send gift cards. So like, I forget who it was, but there's a big YouTuber that says when he's out of stock on an item, he'll still ship out the item. He'll just ship out a gift card and say, I'm sorry. And you know, you're trying to work the system, but as far as the scam, it's just crazy. So, anyways, all right, hey, we got some reseller. I think we should jump to reseller topics. We kind of like, you know, we're a little behind on schedule here. So
are we? Oh man,
a lot right, going on.
Let me pull up the notes so I know what I'm talking about. All right,
and so it's there really are small. Some big moves happening.
All right, here we go.
What's really
okay? eBay acquires Goldin. eBay is not removing negative feedback, a lawsuit from 2015, a reminder if someone cannot make an offer that they have a history of non-payment, and much more. All of this on Reseller News. Okay. All right, what do we got?
So this is a big deal, and I want to hear your thoughts on this. So do you remember I had mentioned about that show that they had on Netflix called, I forget what it was called, but there was this company called Goldin. They're an auction house. And they specialized in like sports memorabilia, video games, you name it. And I had talked about how they brought on like some expert to like analyze Beanie Babies. I'm like, okay, this is all for show. But at the same time, like they were able to get a lot of money for a Brooklyn Dodgers jersey. Like, you know, they did a lot of great marketing. And so it was a pretty cool show. Ken Goldin's the guy who obviously owns Goldin. And they just got bought out by eBay. So let me read eBay's memo about this, and then we'll talk about it here. So it says, eBay a global commerce leader that connects millions of sellers and buyers around the world, and collectors, the parent company of PSA. So PSA is the one that does greetings with cards and, you know, certifying things. The parent company's collectors, okay? The leading third-party authentication and grading provider in the collectibles industry today announced they signed definitive agreements to enter into a series of transactions that include a commercial agreement. The sale of Goldin from collectors to eBay. So Goldin, I guess, was owned by collectors, and now Goldin is going to eBay. And then the sale of the eBay Vault. So eBay Vault was like, if you had high-end collectibles, baseball cards, you actually sent them and eBay would keep them in a vault and they would store it for you, and, you know, to keep things safe. And any transaction that happened, like buying and selling, would just happen within that vault instead of them actually being shipped out to people's homes or
now. Has that been a successful program? I feel like I don't know about that at all.
I don't know, but I think it's just because we're not in the collector world. I think that's why we haven't heard it. But eBay has been pushing the vault thing like crazy. There's this whole other sports card world that we don't deal with. I see some of it because I kind of look at some of the stuff on TikTok just to see what's going on. But there's a whole world. Now, this is what's interesting. So Goldin was sold by collector who owns PSA to eBay. And then eBay sold Vault to collector. And so what's happening now is, according to the news story, it says that basically, I'm going to just summarize, if you have items that you get graded via PSA, they'll automatically be listed on eBay once they're graded. That's what it said. But it didn't really say what the situation with Goldin's going to be. And I did hear, you know, Goldin discussing how excited they were about this on social media, how this is a big deal. I'm kind of torn, and I'll share with you why I'm torn. I find that when people want good money for items, as far as auction houses, they don't go to eBay. They go to Christie's, they go to Goldin, they go to Heritage Auctions, they go to other auction houses, and they kind of know who to go to. Like, they know the people to approach, they know who are going to be the high-end people. Where I find that, like, eBay, like, whenever I have something valuable, or I know somebody who has something valuable, and they put it on eBay, like, you're at the mercy of the algorithm. You're at the mercy of whoever shows up. So on the one hand, I'm like, all right, is this going to take away from the Goldin name, right? Is Goldin just going to be swallowed up in this huge conglomerate that's called eBay and no longer be able to market goods like they used to? Or is it going to allow for more people to go to eBay instead of, you know, being separated to Goldin? There's that one piece. The other side is, I hope in all of this, this would be my dream, would be that now eBay makes it easy for you to get items graded. So instead of having to go to a third party, instead of having to go to like PSA or having to go, you know, directly ship out your cards to them, now you can just go to eBay and eBay could take care of it because of their relationship with PSA. I don't think that's in the works, but I think that would be a plus, because one of the things that keeps me from sending all my items, I just want to deal with all the hassle. If I could just deal with one company, it would be better. But I got to tell you, I find that, you know, all the negative talk about eBay that I bring, that many other resellers bring, like, eBay is performing pretty well. If you look at the market, even in the stock market, like, they're doing really well in the last year. So despite all the drama that we discuss, eBay is making moves, and hopefully these moves will play out if things rebound by 2025. Thoughts,
yeah,
Michael?
Sounds good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't have a lot of thoughts on that one. Like you said, don't do like the collectible card stuff, but yeah.
I don't know. I find that, you know, Christie's and Sotheby's and Heritage Auctions and like all these places, like, if you want to see stuff that sells for big money, you go to these auction houses. If you want to see stuff that maybe on a good day would rack up a lot of money, you go to eBay. But I find that a lot of things get undersold on eBay. And so if eBay could fix that, if eBay can somehow market it and maybe, you know, reach those clientele, maybe they're working on this. Maybe I'm being too harsh. Maybe I don't know enough. But I don't know. I'm not really sold on. I think it's a good move on eBay. I don't know if it's a good move for Goldin. That's my thoughts on that. All right. So this next thing here, I don't know. I get hit with these, with, you know, this kind of these discussions with people on social media all the time. I think eBay is pretty much done removing negative feedback. And I know somebody in the comments is going to go, I just called last week and they removed two. I know somebody's going to say that. But in my experience, you know, I'm done calling eBay. And I know a lot of people have kind of given up because they've tried and they've pushed. Now, I always, you know, I'm always thinking, like, has anybody ever tried to fight eBay back about this? Because it seems really unfair, right? You do everything right. You offer free returns. You know, you communicated with the customer. You dropped everything. And so I just did some random research and I found that somebody actually tried to sue a buyer on eBay and they lost. So they tried to sue him for negative feedback. So this happened back in 2015. I had to go back. No, actually, this is actually more further back. 2013. The court case took 2 years. So an eBay seller sued two customers for negative feedback. Okay. Let me just give you a story. One of the customers was Amy Nichols, an office administrator for a manufacturer in South Carolina. She bought a microscope light for her employer in February 2013. After paying $175 plus shipping for the item, MedExpress said in the court filing that it took the equipment to the Valley City Post Office, where it was weighed and shipped to Nichols. Though MedExpress claimed that it paid the full shipping cost, for some reason, unknown to MedExpress, the equipment was received by Nichols with $1.44 postage due. $1.44. That's all that was due. Okay. And that doesn't even happen anymore. Usually now eBay takes care of that. You'll get a message after the fact that you underweight something and they will charge you, or that you overweight something and they will credit you. So these days are gone. Anyway, stick with the story. I found this fascinating. So MedExpress apologized immediately and offered to reimburse Nichols for the postage due, right? It's $1.44. Like, who's going to put up a fight? But she went ahead, the buyer, and posted a negative comment about the charge on eBay site. Order arrived with postage due with no communication from the seller beforehand. And again, this is a lesson. You should always communicate, okay? Now, I don't think MedExpress needed to communicate on this one because they didn't know. They thought they weighed everything correctly. So MedExpress filed another lawsuit on the same day against another customer, Dennis Rogan, who left a neutral review. Man, this is wild. I guess if you got the money. So anyways, long story short, the company got negative publicity. And then after they apologized and they withdrew the lawsuit, the court still said, hey, guess what? You brought this lawsuit. You need to pay $19,250 to cover the legal fees of these two customers. And I was like, wow. Okay, so lesson to anybody out there, if you ever got it so mad that you wanted to sue somebody for leaving you a negative feedback or you wanted to do something, don't do it. It's not worth it to you.
Well, you were talking, I think it's kind of funny because you were talking, I don't know if you said it on air or not, but when we were talking about the you getting upset with that local deal that fell through because they sold it to a grandma instead of a reseller, you texted them back and you made that comment about them taking money out of your pocket and you need it too, and you're, you know, all of that. You kind of made a comment about we were talking about that whole situation and people leaving, you know, feedback, and I said it's okay. You said, but like, no, sometimes feedback that people leave you, it's like almost like libel. It's almost like lies. Like if they're lying about, you know, you in a comment or lying about. But it comes down to the thing of like, man, our system, our core system isn't really set up to be able to handle that. You know what I mean? Like $19,000 was the legal fees for that. There's no way that's worth easy. It. You know what I mean? Like the average person couldn't sue. So I don't think that's something that customers or sellers in general need to worry about, which is why there's one story from 2015. But I think what's maybe more applicable than just the interesting story of this is, like you said, eBay is potentially not removing negative feedback at the level that they used to remove negative feedback. You used to be able to call. It was relatively simple. Yeah, we got your back. Mm-hmm. No problem. But maybe it's just not as important anymore. You know, possibly. Like I don't think it hurts in the algorithm. Like I think there are certain things that hurt you in the algorithm potentially a lot more. But I don't know if like one negative feedback and again, anecdotally, I've experienced where it's like, hey, I had like a weird neutral and all of a sudden my sales dropped, or we've seen people in the comments say the same thing. But I think as time goes, one or two negative feedbacks over thousands of positive feedbacks, I just don't know if it really matters as much. And is it even worth us sweating about trying to get removed?
Yeah, I'll still sweat about it and I'll still fight it. But I do think it's true about what you're saying. I think it's just the frustration of it. Now, would I go, like, I would not sue buyers. This was not a good call. So real quick, here's the last part of the story that I found was interesting. It said, let me see. So they're quoting, I'm trying to see who they quoted. Okay. So somebody was quoted, so MedExpress did not respond to a request for comment from ABC News about this week's ruling by the court, which heard the case for Rogan and Nichols together and issued the sanctions in favor of them jointly. After the ruling, Nine Heron said in a joint statement, "We were obviously happy to see that the magistrate recognized the frivolous nature of the claims." Okay, so those are the buyers. Then this was interesting. "Should the magistrate's decision be adopted by the court, and we certainly expect that it will, this long and frustrating battle will finally be concluded. Thankfully, Amy and Dennis stood up." These are the lawyers. "Thankfully, Amy and Dennis stood up for what they believed in, and in doing so, they struck a blow in favor of the First Amendment rights of all online commenters." So I guess leaving negative feedback is a First Amendment right. That's what this court. I just found that fascinating. Just if you know, you study law or any of that stuff. Because eBay tells me that all the time. When I tell them, "Hey, this is not true, this did not happen," they go, "Well, that's their opinion." So maybe that's where they're coming from. Maybe that's what they're saying. Like, hey, that they have the right to free speech, to make up lies if they want, and we can't do anything about it. So, anyways, I'll leave it there. I just found the story fascinating. All right. Hey, this other thing I thought we would share, just because I don't think a lot of people are aware. If you ever get a message from someone and they're trying to haggle you in the messages, like, you know, you have it over 50 and they're like, "Would you take 40? A lot of the times it's people that don't pay for things. And the reason you know that is because if you ask them, like, "Hey, shoot me an offer," you'll get a response that eBay's not letting me, send an offer. Or, you know, if you send an offer, like, it doesn't get to them. Like, you could, because that's happened to me before, where they'll ask me and I'm like, "Oh yeah, just shoot me an offer." And they're like, "Well, I can't shoot an offer." I'm like, "What? That's kind of weird." Or I'll tell somebody, like, "No, I sent an offer for this much. You didn't get it." They're like, "No, I didn't receive anything like that." And I this has happened enough for me to go, like, these are people that obviously don't pay. I've actually had people like this that I actually changed the price for them on eBay on the listing and they still didn't buy it, or they still didn't pay. So my warning to you is, if you get people like this, the best way to avoid non-payment or the hassle of somebody who's like this is just tell them to shoot you an offer. And if they go crickets, then that's on them. Or the other alternative, you can revise the price and make them pay outright. But chances are, unless they're serious about it, if they don't buy it right away, they're never going to buy. They were just wasting your time. So just thought I'd share that with people. Okay, one more thing. Have you noticed how many, I don't know, you know, I'm on social media way more than you are, but I got to tell you, there's a lot of resellers that have just disappeared. Have you noticed that? I don't know. Even people we've interviewed, like, they don't exist anymore. Mm. Like, I don't know what's happened.
Yeah.
Maybe
it's not as big in that sense. I think you got to remember, like, the influencer side of things. One of the reasons why people do YouTube or do Instagram is they're trying to build an audience. And, you know, we do the same thing in a way. Like, we want to have an audience of people who listen to us. We try to put out content that they want to hear and see. But, like, we've been doing this now over 5 years. It's like, are we going on 6 years now? Like, we've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, I think we're past that. But
and, you know, it's a grind. It's a lot of work. It's not a huge payoff if we put the amount of money and effort and energy and time into just reselling as we do this. We'd probably be making way more money on the reselling side. So I'm sure some of the people who are influencers, they tried it. And it's like anything, like, it's what's the law? I can't remember the exact, but, like, in any situation, like, only a small percentage rises up to the top. I'm not saying that like we're at the top. I mean, obviously, if you look at our YouTube numbers, we're small fry. You know, we don't have the tens of thousands of people listening or watching every YouTube video. We have more on the podcast side, but we don't have that kind of pull. So if 100 new people start a YouTube channel for reselling, maybe one of them makes it to the level we're at. And if every 1,000 that start, you know, one or two are going to make it to a level where it's actually super profitable and they make it into those high levels. And so I think a lot of people try for a while and they just realize it's not worth the energy and time they're putting into it. And they just focus more on reselling, right? They go dark on the influencing aspect, as it were, side of things. And they just resell more. And one of the reasons why, in the same way that in 2019, when we first started, 2017, 18, 19, 20, even during that whole fiasco, like reselling was prime, you know, lots of people, it was, and you could make money doing anything like that Gary Vee quote. Like if you're not making money right now, like you can't really brag about being a hustler because anybody can make money right now. Like it's when you're in that bull market, everything is making money. And so it was a lot easier to build an audience on things and to try and put out content that people wanted to see because everybody and their brother was like, man, I'll try this reselling thing. I'll look at how easy it is to make money. And then as it gets harder, and it has definitely gotten harder, as it gets more challenging and difficult to do, can you still make good money and make a living doing it? Yeah, but it's not as easy. And I think not as many people are jumping in and joining it in the same way. So I don't know. I think reselling is definitely harder now. So I think that is one of the factors. But I also think some of those people, you know, I tell you what, during that like year three, year four mark, there were times when I was like, I might be done with the podcast. This is a lot of work.
We had serious discussions. I remember that. I felt, man, because some of them were really good resellers. And I just wonder what happened, you know? Then there's two sides to the coin. There's the one side where I always warn people, should I go full time? And I always tell people like avoid it as much as you can, unless it's something you really want to do. Right. So we have people like Tim the Slim, like no matter in the Discord, like no matter what I told that guy, he went full time and he's killing it. Like he's making it happen. Right. And then there's other people who have been doing full time for a while, like especially on Amazon. I find that Amazon's become really difficult and people like just disappeared. Like they're gone. Like they realized like they had a good thing and that good thing dried up and, you know, they had to adapt a lot and they don't. So I always tell this to people all the time, like entrepreneurship is not for the weak. Reselling is not for the weak. I'm not a strong guy. I just have no options. And so this is what I'm going to do for now. You know, I strongly urge people, especially right now, you know, I know a lot of people don't like me talking about the macro, but, you know, the Fed just recently stopped any announcement of cutting rates. They were supposed to cut rates like I think twice by now, multiple times this year, and now it may never happen. Now we may even get higher rates. And on top of that, inflation, and we said this from day one, is not transitory, and inflation's creeping up again. And understand, if you know, the basic econ of inflation is when those numbers show, that doesn't mean that that inflation has dropped to that number. That means the rate of how much it's growing each month has gone down to that number. So inflation is still happening. Prices are still going up. They're just, you know, now they're going faster than they were before. And I think the next few months, I think are going to get really bumpy in reselling. You know, we may have good month, we may have bad months. I do think things will pick up by the end of 2024 and into 2025. That's just my thoughts. I think 2025 could be a very good year, depending on how things go. Just be careful out there, you know, going all in. Just make sure you have everything taken care of and check out our OG episodes where we talk about, you know, what does it take to be a full-time seller? All right. Hey, we mentioned the Discord a lot on this podcast. And the reason being, it's because it's a thriving community that we love being a part of. And it's a Pure as a Podcast community. And part of being in that, well, the entryway to get into that is by helping us out on Patreon for $5.55 a month. Think about that. $5.55 a month. You can't even get a Big Mac for $5.55 anymore. You can't get a Chick-fil-A sandwich for $5.55. I don't know what the prices are in Texas, but a Chick-fil-A sandwich here is like $7 for one. For one Chick-fil-A sandwich. It's crazy. So
prices are crazy.
It is, and they're not going to go back down. So our prices have stayed steady, even though we probably should raise them at some point in time. Jump on and help us out. $5.55 a month. Go to patreon.com/PureSoulPodcast or go to the link below and sign up. Helps us out a lot. And then you get to be part of the Discord, which I love the Discord because, you know, whether I'm there or not, it is thriving. There's all kinds of different resellers, from full-time to part-time, from Amazon to eBay, from vintage to new. Just, it's a great group of individuals. And so check out our Discord. Help us out there. And as always, we are Pure Soul Podcast on all social media, except for on X, we are Pure Soul Cast. You can always give us a call, 619-738-1170. That's 619-738-1170. Or shoot us an email at puresoulpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, a great for all of you that watch us. And if you haven't watched us yet, jump on over to YouTube, subscribe, hit that like button, smash that subscribe, whatever it is, do what you need to do.
Yeah.
And
just push the buttons gently if you'd like to, you know, click your mouse, you tap your screen, all the different ways you could possibly press the button. You can do it.
And as always, grateful for the iTunes reviews. I think next episode we need to share some of them. We haven't looked at them in a while. I always find them entertaining. And don't think it's because, you know, our egos end up doing well. Sometimes they don't do well. Sometimes we read some crazy comments. You know, we don't, you know, not everybody's a fan of us. So appreciate all of you, though, that tune in and listen. All right. So, wait, we got to talk some bolos.
Bolo.
What's your bolo?
All right. So since I mentioned that Jensen toolbox, I'll mention the name of the tools that were in there, just so that people are aware of them. I think they are a bolo. So it's Xcelite. It's Xcelite is the brand, and they make lots of like screwdrivers and like not really sockets. They're like drive nut screwdriver things and pliers, and a lot of them are made more for electronics. So these aren't like tools that you would use on cars very often, or like big type things like that. These are more like smaller tools for like intricate work. And the tools, the company started like in the 20s or 30s. It's been around for a long time. And a lot of what makes them unique is the way they're like interchangeable. So you can change out the different heads of the screwdrivers. And just look them up. You'll kind of see a lot of times like the screwdriver set with the socket ends, it's like an orange. They're typically like an orange color. Once you see them, you'll recognize them when you're out and about. And they sell really well. Like I said, if you can find a whole set of the pieces, you're looking at, you know, anywhere from $30 to $100 for just a handful of screwdrivers. So it's definitely worth doing. Same thing with their pliers. So just add that to your things you're looking for if you're looking through tools, and you can definitely make some money on Xcelite tools.
Nice. So mine is a repeat bolo, but I want to bring it up. Actually, did you already spell Xcelite?
Yeah, should spell Xcelite.
There you go. So I bring this up because the other day, you know, I did go to the thrift store and I bought these two vintage Walkmans. Okay, Sony Walkman. I bought one. It was an F1 Sony Walkman. It's like one of the earlier models. And then I bought a Sony Walkman Sport. You know, those that had like the yellow and orange, like the vintage look.
Yep.
And that one was for CDs. Well, I didn't test them and I should have tested them, right? I paid for the F1 Walkman, which was cassette tape. I paid $60 for it. And yeah, it didn't work. And then the other one, I paid $45 for it and it didn't work. But here's the deal. Those things are so high in demand, I still made profit. So I sold the F1 Walkman for a little bit over $100. And then I sold the Sony Sport one for $100, right? So I mean, I didn't make a lot of money. I made like $30 a piece on each of them. It was risky, but I knew if worst came to worst and I came home and I couldn't test them, I knew that for parts I could make good money. And I find that the Sony Walkman market, whether it be cassette tapes or CDs, they tend to hold their value. Like if you're able to find one of these sealed, you're looking at an easy $300. I mean, when's the last time, Mike, you and I have found one of these? Like, it's been forever. I think about one of my hustle of the week. I think it was like episode 8 or something where I found one of these. And then I found another one, I think like episode somewhere in the hundreds, because they become rare and rare. And so keep an eye, you know, obviously test them. You know, it's always worth to test them. But even if like you're at a garage sale, and here's the thing, I don't know if they're called audiophiles. I don't know if they're called Sony collectors, whatever you want to call them. Like, if people see these in the wild, they're going to snatch them quick. So if you see one of these, you need to move on them, because, you know, the scarcer they are, the more valuable, the more people are keeping an eye out. And now that we shared on the podcast, they're instantly going to tank, because all the millions of people that watch our show are going to go looking for these. But I'm telling you, Sony Walkman, always a win. We haven't shared this in a long time, but in case people don't know, definitely take a look. And it has to be Sony. Iowa, AIWA, those don't do well. Jensen, JENSEN, don't do well. Toshiba, none of those. I primarily say it has to be a Sony. And if you got a Sony and it's vintage, you're looking at good money depending on your cost. All right, Mike, what are you looking forward to here?
So this last weekend, I couldn't do garage sales like I wanted to, because I was stuck fixing my car. My car is still running. I talked about it several weeks ago about some issues with it, but I had to do some more work on it, kind of keep it going. So it was out of commission and I had to get it back up because my wife has been driving me to work and we kind of need two cars, but I should have the car going smooth now. So I will be back at garage sales. Definitely looking forward to that. What about you, Orlando?
So I got a few things. I keep talking about the flooding, but you know, I have not really rearranged anything yet. It's been like 2 weeks since everything was finalized. So if you don't know, I got flooded. They had to redo the floors in some of my rooms and I had to move a ton of inventory. And what I've realized is that I am occupying so much space that does not need to be taken up. So for example, I'll go to a tote, like I sell a pair of shoes and there's like two pairs of shoes in that tote. Like, I should consolidate that tote into another tote. Clothing, I'll go into one and there's like four pieces of clothing and I could easily move those four to another tote. So I'm kind of looking forward to finally consolidating. I know this is going to sound crazy, but I have, let's say I have at least 50, but let's say I consolidated 50. I think I can get those 50 down to 30. So if you think about how much space that's going to allow for other things, you know, especially now that like I just slowly started selling toys. And I have toys everywhere, but now I need to organize them. Now I need to have them with better SKU labels. I need to put them in a better place. So I'm kind of looking forward to that, because it's going to open up a lot more space where I live. Just because I spent a good amount of time last week in one of the rooms, because I was like, you know what? I want this room to look better. You know, if I'm going to do whatnot auctions, I don't want to have to deal with moving around stuff. I want everything ready to go for an auction every single time. And so I've been able to do that. I'm also looking forward to doing more whatnot auctions. If you haven't yet, you can use our link below, get free $15 for whatnot. But I love everybody that jumps on the whatnot. I'm glad people are getting deals. I'm looking forward to getting to that place where like I can sell stuff and by the next morning, you know, I can get paid. I think that's a very nice feature of whatnot. I don't know how many. I think you need 1,000. I think we only have like 300 or something in our account. We still got a ways to go. But there are people that have approached me about buying out their eBay store. And so I may buy out a couple of eBay stores here in the near future. It all depends on how things go, as far as the economy, as far as, you know, there's a lot going on in the world right now, in case you have no idea what's happening right now. Okay. Last one, I want another good garage sale haul. I want one of those hauls where like you source an entire morning and you have stuff that'll keep you busy for a month. And I haven't had something like that in a long time. So I don't know, you know, we're approaching the end of April. There are some great garage sales in April, May, even into June. And again, in San Diego, it's pretty much year round. Now, do you anticipate things are going to slow down as the humidity hits over there, Mike?
Oh yeah, for sure. Once the heat kicks in, the garage sales will probably slow down, but I don't know, maybe church rummage sales will keep going. There's a lot of indoor spaces for that. And then I'll just kind of shift a little bit more to thrift stores and Facebook Marketplace. I'll still do fun.
Now, do you find that there's a lot of resellers when you're sourcing out there?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Especially,
has anybody recognize you?
Not yet. Not that I know of. I mean, I feel like there's times when people, you know, you kind of have a feeling that maybe they recognize you, but they're just not saying anything. And then, you know, you get a comment later on like, hey, I thought I saw you at a thrift store. Haven't had anybody approach me yet. So maybe just need to be on the Instagram more. Maybe that's what it is.
I don't know. Cause here, like every week I get recognized. And I, you know, and we're like you said, we're not like super popular, but you
we're
know,
small
I guess
fish in maybe, a big pond.
Yeah, but you know, so it's I just find it interesting. I always, man, I got to make it out to Texas. So, you know, maybe this summer we'll make it happen. Anyway, thank you to
and
all
then,
of you.
And then you'll get recognized. You'll get recognized out here.
Well, I will say the beard has gone a long way to being recognized. Like, any place I go anywhere, they're like, oh yeah, how could we forget you and the beard? I always get that every, and here's a funny thing. So, I was, and you know, I'm always trying to dip in my toes into education again. And, I was talking to a school and not that I'm going to, you know, go full time anytime soon, unless the door opens, but I had mentioned to them, I said, hey, so is this beard going to be a problem? And they said, no. And I was like, sweet. So the beard will never go away. The beard is here to stay. And with that said,
it could probably go away.
Just a little bit. I've gotten used to it though.
I know, but you like, play with it too much. Don't play with it so much.
Yeah, but it'd be like removing an arm if I had to shave this beard.
Damn. Fair enough.
I love how we ended this podcast. Thank you to all the real ones that stayed to the end, to stay to this random conversation. Appreciate every single one of you. And with that being said, make sure to be real.
Be relevant
and be reselling
leads.
Peace.